Welcome to The Public Storyteller. My name is Michael Stock with Dr. Karen Neal. Karen is affiliate professor at Florida Atlantic University and a professional storyteller. Hi, Karen.
Hello, Michael.
What story do you have today?
Michael, here's one from Evelyn Benson.
I'm married to an American. I'm a Filipina. And he was actually 14 years older than me. We met in San Francisco. He was born in New York, but he had lived in California for more than 30 years. He was 55 years old when I met him. Was he? Yeah, I think so. I was 40. And we had our funny moments, of course. He was like, 6'2", and I'm just barely 5 feet, and I could barely reach his armpit, I would say. It was my second marriage, his second marriage, and we both had two daughters. So it was indeed, like, for me, a jubilee. We were able to overcome certain obstacles. It was not difficult. You overcome a lot of the obstacles by love. And he had his first heart attack in 1995, and that he always makes a joke of it, that I could always make Lazarus rise from the grave, and that when I threw the door open at the hospital in Kaiser, where we were then in San Francisco and we migrated to Miami, I just said, you can't die yet because my papers are not done yet. We had just filed my permanent residency. And then that was in 95. And then all of a sudden in 98, he decided to move to Miami. At the time, he was working with United Airlines and he had to choose a major hub where there's freight, international cargo. So we had a choice between Denver, New York, and Miami. And of course, he chose Miami. And I often told him, why Miami? It's no different from the Philippines. Well, I am in paradise here in San Francisco. But then he made the pitch about investing for the future, that property values were cheaper in Miami. We dove right in. I agreed with him. And we moved around October 97th. We live in Kendall. We had a pool, and we both loved swimming. And I think that was really the center of the home. We had the kids. And then, sadly, in 2005, he was diagnosed with prostate cancer. And it was a long struggle. You'll never know when would be the last day. He was given 6 months. He outlived all the prognosis from 2005. We had the chemo, radiation, and everything. But he always told me that I was his secret weapon, that I think recovery was more than just having a positive attitude about it. He has always been strong. He lost the sight on one eye. And then later on, when he lost the second eye, he just said, oh, thank God I had practiced for so many years that he was able to navigate the maze of the house. And he was really very positive about it. He was confident he would beat it. And then finally, in March 2014, all the kids flew in. Billy from San Francisco, we were all at home, we were having lunch, and the grandkids were with us. We never thought that it would be that just the last day together with him. And on March 28th, I woke up at 9:15 in the morning. The dogs had been scratching on the door of my bedroom. I found Will on the floor. He was still conscious at that time. And I tried to lift him. But remember, Will is 6'2". He weighed about 250 pounds, and I'm just a petite 5 feet. So I had him halfway up, and he just stared at me. He gave me that glazed look, and he nodded, you know, his head left to right. And I guess it was his way of saying that this is it. You know, and I thought I would still have him because I had applied CPR before when he had his second heart attack. But then when he moved his head, and I guess that was it, his last words were not even my name. He was addressing our Labrador, Leah, to move because Leah was in my way on trying to lift him up. And he said, Leah, and that was it. And I put his head down, put a pillow under his head, and I really started to do CPR. But he had a do not resuscitate instruction. It's a living will. And I understood it, but right at that moment, you just couldn't give up. So I still tried, and at the same time I had my cell phone with me, I started calling 911. And the lady was with me all throughout, and she said, I'm sorry, ma'am. So she had dispatched the police and the paramedics to the house. Now, here's the strange thing. When somebody dies at home, well, they came. At first, I had to secure the dog because they wanted the dog out because they said that they couldn't approach Will until I had the dog secured. And they told me, ma'am, we've lost him. You know that they wouldn't take him to the hospital. I still begged. I said, let's take him to the hospital. And then they wouldn't let me touch the body for a few hours. They asked me for his doctor, and when they talked to the nurse, they asked me if I had made arrangements. So I called the funeral home. They picked him up, but it took hours before that could be taken care of. And all the while, he was on the floor, and I said I would change him, make him. He has always been a distinguished gentleman, and I tried to lift him to change his clothes. And then the policewoman who had come to the house told me, ma'am, you can't. So I took out his mom's favorite blanket and, of course, covered him. And until the persons from the funeral home came by. And I'm just sharing this because if you have somebody who died in your house and you're expecting to have certain protocol observed, or you want to do things, you won't be able to do that.
Evelyn Benson with a story. Well, it's a tragic story, Karen.
It's a tragic story, yes. And yet, it's a story that is important to hear because it talks about power and control at the same time as it talks about helplessness.
I didn't hear power and control. I just heard love and devotion.
Love and devotion go without saying. Of course, you're right, Michael. And it really is a story about a relationship over time. But actually, the relationship over time is sort of preamble or preface or contextualizing the meat of the story, the scene of the story that is Evelyn's husband's last moments. And then after his death, what happens then?
I'm not clear on the power and control.
Well, Evelyn uses some wonderful expressions early on in the story. She talks about being her husband's secret weapon. She says, you can't die yet because my papers aren't done. She talks about how he's like Lazarus rising from the grave. She talks about how she executed CPR. She did CPR on him a couple of times. So in other words, this is a woman who is very clearly quite strong and is doing everything she can to forestall death one way or another. She may only be 5 feet tall, Michael, and her husband might have been 6'2", but she is absolutely a powerhouse. And then what happens at the end? She loses all of that power.
Well, it was really admirable, though, listening to the devotion she had to her husband.
And so we feel with her so strongly that sense of helplessness, that sense of frustration when she calls 911 and suddenly her husband's body is out of bounds. She's not allowed to change and dress him. She's not allowed to touch him. And what she says at the end of the story is very poignant. She explains why she's telling this, and she says, I want you to know that if there is a death in your house, this is what's going to happen after you call. And before you call 911, you may want to have your last moments alone with your loved one, because know that once you call them, you give away that control.
Do you think Evelyn was upset that the last words of her husband was of the dog?
Well, it's a great question, Michael, because obviously she loved this dog. I'm sure she did. I mean, she didn't say it in so many words, but this was their dog. And the dog was scratching at her door. The dog seemed to have more control almost in his last hours than did Evelyn. You know, we tell so much about ourselves and about our situation when we tell a story, even though we may think we're not revealing these things. The fact that Evelyn brings up the dog's name that he said last, to me, you bring up a detail like this, not because it's a great detail, it's ironic, it's unusual, but because it means something to you. And Evelyn loved her husband very much. Maybe she would have liked his last words to be her name or I love you. I think by giving that example, whether she was aware of it or not, and we're not aware of what we say any more than we're aware of what we write. Things come up unconsciously or subconsciously. I think Evelyn is saying, you know, even before he died, even at the end, you know, the relationship already was changing. I already wasn't his secret weapon. I already was losing some of that control. And so I think it's a beautiful story and a very poignant story about what happens at death. And what I can say about Evelyn's story is that it's a beautiful testament to the power of love, but also to the power of death.
Well, thank you for bringing that story in, Karen. If our listeners have stories that happened here in South Florida, how can they get in touch with you?
Send me an email to cneil, that's C-N as in Nancy, E-I-L-E, at fau.edu.
Our website also has contact information, as well as archived stories at wlrn.org. Click on Radio and the Public Storyteller. Thanks, Karen.
Thank you, Michael. See you next week.
Dr. Karen Neal is affiliate professor at Florida Atlantic University and a professional storyteller. My name is Michael Stock. Public Storyteller returns next Sunday.